Boxing can be a brutal sport, but it can also be beautiful and sometimes even cinematic. So, let's talk boxing. To quote the referee Joe Cortez whenever he starts one of his bouts, "I'm fair, but I'm firm." Or the immortal words of the dearly departed referee Mills Lane, "Let's get it on."
You are my density. You are my density.
So before we talk boxing, I just want to bring up a fact that I'm sure many of you, the four people that were listening to the first episode, said, "What the hell are you talking about?" And that is that Psycho 4 is only available on VHS. Okay, it's on DVD too. But you can't stream it, so you still have to buy a copy, whether it's VHS or DVD. So, you know, I wasn't totally wrong. But anyway, back to boxing. It's not very popular these days, really. I mean, occasionally from the occasional huge bout. Now everyone's into like MMA or UFC, which I don't know. I've just never gotten into. It's just, it's a little bit too brutal. And it's just, I don't know. Guys are end up sitting on each other or smothering people and weird grappling holds. It's just not my vibe. But when I started getting into boxing, watching boxing in like the, you know, the late 80s, 90s, it was kind of a heyday. You had, you know, Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield and Riddick Bowe and Julio Cesar Chavez. And my grandfather actually was a boxer in Oakland, California, way back in the day. His name was Chick Kansas. I don't think he was very successful, just kind of a local palooka. Totally cool guy, though. And I used to call him Papa Chick. Kind of near the end of his life, he ended up living at a convalescent hospital with my grandma. And I remember I went to visit him once and with my dad. And we were kind of standing in the hallway, and he just started singing. He wasn't totally mentally sharp at that time, but he was singing, "Girl of my dreams, I love you, honest I do." And that song always kind of stuck with me. That song appears in the Alan Parker movie Angel Heart with Robert De Niro, Mickey Rourke, and Lisa Bonet, which has a cool twist at the end. If you're paying attention, you probably figure it out, but it's kind of worth watching. But anyway, back to boxing. I actually saw Mike Tyson a few years back with my mom when we were in Los Angeles, and I saw him at Pete's Coffee. He was devouring a muffin. I was super tempted to talk to him, but I was like, some people don't like to be bothered while they're eating, and plus, Tyson might kill me. But seeing Tyson eating brought me back to 1997, where I was gathered with a bunch of people on some rooftop to watch the Tyson versus Holyfield rematch. And early on in the fight, Tyson kind of bites at Evander Holyfield's ear. And we were all just like, what the hell? I was super pissed because I was like, oh God, don't bite it again. Come on, let's fight. And of course, he bit it again, bit part of it off. And I was so pissed. But that was kind of, you know, when Tyson was, he wasn't doing mentally great, obviously. And he was kind of, you know, that was kind of during his downfall. And actually, I saw Tyson one other time at the Margarito versus Cotto fight, the first fight. And Margarito is kind of this like really tough Mexican, could take anything, could take all the punches in the world and would keep coming. Not like great technically, but Miguel Cotto, super skilled, pretty powerful. But I just figured Margarito can take everything. He'll eventually wear Cotto down. So I went to Vegas and we had really good seats because my friend's dad was like, I don't know, president of Showtime Sports or something. And we bet on the fight. And I bet on Margarito and I won some money. And I kind of felt terrible, you know, months after, because they kind of figured out that Margarito had actually loaded his gloves. They put some kind of like hard cement type stuff in there. That's why Cotto got beat. That's why Cotto got so beat up. Cotto got his revenge, though. He had a rematch with him later and just beat the hell out of him. But anyway, at that fight, I saw Tyson. He wasn't sitting too far from us. And there were these two guys in front of him. Tyson was there with his kids. And there was these two guys that kept jumping up and standing up, these two dorky, like, Wall Street types. And so at one point, Tyson kind of tapped on their shoulder. And you could see he was like, you know, "I've got my kids here. Can you not stop coming up and down, you know, getting up?" And the look on their face when they turn around and see Mike Tyson tapping on their shoulder, telling them basically to shut the hell up. It was pretty priceless. And they were like school children after that. I don't even think they turned their heads. They were probably just petrified. It was kind of amazing. I do still watch boxing, but a lot of times the judges are so terrible these days, and I get so pissed. Usually at the end of a fight, I'm fairly drunk, and often I'll like look up the judge online to try and find a phone number for them, or like a lot of times they're lawyers, so I'll find their website, and a couple times I've actually called them, left a message, you know, kind of drunk. It's been like, that was the worst judging I've ever seen. I could judge better. You're an idiot, you know, blah, blah, blah. No one's ever gotten back to me, obviously. But yeah, it's just like when bad judging ruins a fight, that's the worst. Boxing is legendarily corrupt, but you would wish that, you know, is no longer the case. But I don't know. Sometimes you're like, the fix is in. But yeah, there's like a lot of times a storyline with boxing, or like a narrative, like, you know, the young sensation, the older fighter with one great performance left, or the complete out of nowhere underdog that wins, kind of like Buster Douglas versus Mike Tyson, or the fight that just is going one way the entire fight, and then at the end by one punch the other guy wins. So just that surprise element is kind of amazing. So now let's get into a couple of movies. A really early one from 1949 is The Setup. It's directed by Robert Wise, who actually co-directed West Side Story and Star Trek The Motion Picture. So the guy had some range. But it's got Robert Ryan, who has the most incredible hairline. There's like an old boxer, kind of over the hill. And the mob wants him to throw this fight. And he just, you know, he just won't do it. He refuses to. You think he's gonna, and then his integrity won't let him. And it's totally cool. It's old as hell, but it's worth watching. Another kind of older one, Rod Serling wrote in 1962. It's Requiem for a Heavyweight with Anthony Quinn. Kind of like this over the hill, pretty punch drunk boxer who's kind of manipulated and abused by his like corrupt promoters. It's pretty cool. I saw it a long time ago. Actually, Cassius Clay, the future Muhammad Ali, is in it as a fighter that beats Anthony Quinn. Mickey Rooney's also in it. But yeah, it's worth watching. So it's been maybe 7 minutes. So yeah, it's time to mention Stacy Keach. Fat City from 1972, directed by John Huston. Legendary, obviously, director of The Maltese Falcon, Treasure of the Sierra Madre, so many others. The Misfits, which was Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe's last movie. And also, John Huston acted in Chinatown. And Jeff Bridges is in it. And Stacy Keach is, you know, kind of just a older, over the hill, never great, you know, had some wins, boxer, but just kind of scraping by. It's set in Stockton, kind of pretty seedy town, just kind of low-life bars and hotel rooms. And, you know, it's just this guy who's trying to come back, and, you know, it's not going to go well. And then Jeff Bridges is kind of a younger version of him who basically not a great boxer either. But yeah, it's just really, it's got a lived in feeling. It's kind of slow paced. I think it looks great. It's a downer, and it's kind of a, you know, you have to be in the right mood for it. And speaking of Stockton, one of my favorite bands, probably the only great thing Stockton has produced, is the band Pavement. Their 1989 Slanted and Enchanted album is amazing, but I'll get into them another episode. But yeah, I think if probably younger people would try and watch Fat City, they would be so bored by it, because it is kind of, you know, slow paced, and there's not like edits every second. You can even follow the action. It's like these days, especially superhero movies. I mean, some indie movies are edited well, but the superhero ones, it's like, you know, they shoot from 14,000 angles. They shoot a million rolls of film or video or whatever, and they just kind of cut every millisecond, so you don't even know what the hell's going on. You're just bombarded by this crap. But it's like these old school directors, John Huston, Sidney Lumet, they had the chops. I mean, they were pretty schooled. They, you know, grew up directing TV plays and stuff like that, and they just knew what angles to shoot, and it would cut together, and it would make sense, and it was just like pro. You occasionally see that these days, but it is a lost art. Speaking about Jeff Bridges and John Huston, they both were together in this totally bananas movie called Winter Kills 1979, directed by William Richert. I think that's how you say his name. He also directed A Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon with the amazing River Phoenix. And he starred as the character Bob, kind of this philosopher king in the River Phoenix, Keanu Reeves movie, My Own Private Idaho, directed by Gus Van Sant. But it is nuts. Jeff Bridges is kind of a, he's the younger son of in this almost like JFK family. And the older brother, kind of the JFK one, gets assassinated. And so he kind of tries to figure out who kills him. And just it's just this whole, you know, paranoid, complicated mess. John Huston is kind of the Joe Kennedy patriarch, head of the family, and he's just frightening. Anthony Perkins is in it, and also Sterling Hayden, who just, you know, is totally out of his mind and drives a tank and is trying to bomb Jeff Bridges while he's driving. It's worth watching once. You may just hate it, but it's so bizarre that it's kind of worth seeing. And a pretty good boxing-related movie directed by one of my favorites, Brian De Palma, 1998, Snake Eyes, Nicolas Cage and Gary Sinise. Kind of this assassination plot set during a big-time boxing match. It's just got some, you know, awesome cinematic techniques with, you know, Brian De Palma. You've always got just interesting camera stuff and just interesting set pieces, a lot of Hitchcock elements that he brings in, split diopters, all this crap. But he's just, you know, he goes for it. He swings for the fences, sometimes falls flat. But those occasional moments are just like, oh, man, this is awesome. This is why I like movies, you know. There's also a pretty cool movie from 1990 with a kind of noir boxing element. It's called After Dark, My Sweet. Directed by James Foley, starring Jason Patric, Bruce Dern, and Rachel Ward. And it's pretty cool. Jason Patric is a punch-drunk boxer who escapes from a mental hospital and kind of gets involved in this scheme with Bruce Dern and Rachel Ward and ends up getting taken advantage of. Jason Patrick's really great in it, and I'll always remember Jason Patric because I went to see the movie Rush. I think I was in high school, and we brought in some bottles of beer. And as soon as I sat down, I dropped my bottle and it sounded like a gunshot. So that was a frequent type of thing that happened in my youth. And a little side fact, Jason Patrick's dad is actually Jason Miller, the late Jason Miller, who wrote and directed his passion project, That Championship Season, which had Robert Mitchum, Martin Sheen, and wait for it, Stacey Keach. And I know I mentioned Cassius Clay earlier, Muhammad Ali, of course. I saw this, I don't know, it was at an art exhibit, this artist, Paul Pfeiffer. He took basically a Muhammad Ali boxing match and he digitally erased both boxers. He couldn't erase them all perfectly. So basically what you see is these like wisps of things like around the ring. And if someone gets knocked down, you just see a little glimmer of something. It's weird. It's kind of fascinating. And I think he's done it with other sports figures. Like I think a basketball where he removes like the rim and all the stuff. So it's just this like figure suspended. But yeah, I never have forgotten that. It was pretty cool. And of course, when anyone thinks of Ali, you generally also think of George Foreman. And I have a little bit of a connection to George Foreman. My dad used to make suits. He was a tailor in Oakland, and he made some suits for George Foreman. And he took me down to see him training once, and I have a picture of George Foreman holding me on his shoulders. I'm probably 6 years old. And actually, during the Rumble in the Jungle, my dad called George Foreman in Africa at the hotel. I think my dad was worried that he may not win. And he just wished him luck. And of course, Foreman ended up losing, getting knocked out during the whole, you know, famous rope-a-dope technique by Muhammad Ali. And one boxing movie I'd like to forget, Scarred Me for Life, is The Champ from 1979, directed by Franco Zeffirelli, which I just had looked up. I didn't realize that. He also directed Romeo and Juliet. It's Ricky Schroeder is John Voight's son, and John Voight is kind of, you know, again, a washed up boxer, not very good. But at the end, he gets, you know, just beat to hell, basically to where he dies in the dressing room, and he's dead. And Ricky Schroeder is just like, you know, talking to him, wake up, champ, wake up. champ, wake up, champ. And he's doing a great performance, crying his eyes out. But, you know, I saw when I was fairly young and just, holy crap, devastating. So, yeah, I mean, avoid it. So, yeah, I would not watch that unless you need to punish someone. And anytime you're talking about boxing movies, obviously you have to mention Raging Bull, Martin Scorsese's movie from 1980, which De Niro won Best Actor for, but actually Best Picture went to Robert Redford's Ordinary People, also a boxing movie. No, I'm just kidding. With Timothy Hutton and Mary Tyler Moore and Donald Sutherland. I saw it once and I can't tell you anything about it because I don't remember. One of my favorite moments from Raging Bull, though, is when he's in his apartment and he's yelling at his wife or girlfriend, and the downstairs neighbor is like, you know, shut up. And then De Niro yells at him, you know, Larry, I'm going to get a hold of that dog and I'm going to eat him for lunch. And then the guy is like, you crazy animal. And then De Niro's like, who's an animal? Your mother's an animal, yo, son of a bitch. The way he says it is just so goddamn funny. But yeah, while we're on the subject briefly of De Niro, I've never forgotten a scene from 1976, Taxi Driver, where De Niro, he's starting to lose it, and he's by himself in his apartment, which I can relate to, and he's watching TV. He's got American Bandstand on, and he's holding a gun, but it's, you know, so it's like couples dancing. He's by himself just looking at this, and this Jackson Browne song is playing, Late for the Sky, which is a pretty good song, but the lyrics always just like gutted me while he's, you know, watching these happy people. It's like, awake again, I can't pretend, and I know I'm alone and close to the end, which is like so perfect for the movie because he is getting close to the end where he completely loses it. And at one point he goes to talk to this kind of older taxi cab driver. He's called the Wizard, played by Peter Boyle. You know, and De Niro's kind of like, I got these bad thoughts in my head. I don't know. They're real bad. And the Wizard is just kind of like, you know, go on, you know, get laid, get drunk, you know, do anything. But you got no choice anyway. I mean, we're all fucked, more or less. And then De Niro's just like, oh, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So that's a funny scene. And Peter Boyle, you know, he's pretty damn cool. So as we approach the championship rounds of this podcast, meaning like near the end, I'm going to lay out a closing argument that's going to blow the top off the media industry, the millions of people that are listening to this. I mean, the four people. Some consider Floyd Mayweather to be the greatest boxer of all time. And I don't. And in a weird way, talking about movies, I consider David Fincher and Christopher Nolan to kind of be the Floyd Mayweather of directors. So listen what I got. They're all stylish as hell and technically brilliant, art directed to a fault, but their movies to me, in trying to make such a perfect product, it's like they're airless and they're joyless. And it's just, it's almost like schoolwork watching their movies. I get no thrill from it. It's like there's no mistakes or messiness. And while there's great moments, it's just overall leaves me flat. I mean, yeah, Floyd Mayweather had a few good fights here and there. And, you know, Christopher Nolan's Memento, I think it was his second movie. It's great. I mean, I love it. I can actually rewatch that. Plus, I'm obsessed with Guy Pearce and even his crappiest movies, which I'll do an episode on him at some point. Inception, good, you know, pretty awesome. I don't want to watch it twice, but, and you know, Fight Club, great. Seven, pretty damn cool. The Game, you know, okay, pretty good. But from then on, just their movies, it's like, I don't know, the artistry like got in the way of the delivery or something. And it's just, I don't know. This, it became the quest for perfection. And, you know, it's like, no one in the world ever said, hey, you want to come over and watch that Floyd Mayweather fight again? I mean, you want to watch a fight again? It's going to be Juan Manuel Marquez versus Manny Pacquiao, number one. I mean, Marquez gets knocked down three times in the first round. He gets his nose broken. Everyone thinks it's over with. You know, Pacquiao's going to blow him out in the second or third round. And the damn thing goes the distance. and it's a draw. Marquez is able to figure him out. I mean, that boxing match has so many storylines going on in it, ups and downs and changes and messiness and all that stuff. I'd rather have, like, I don't know, kind of a flawed movie that just, you know, has some life in it and makes some mistakes and just takes chances and isn't, you know, it doesn't maybe have the perfect angle or the perfect performance, but, you know, you can tell it's you know, it's lifelike or something. And if by chance you are ever sitting around and you're like, hey, let's watch Interstellar again. Well, instead of that, watch Inner Space from 1987, directed by Joe Dante with Dennis Quaid, Martin Short and Meg Ryan, where Martin Short gets miniaturized and put into Dennis Quaid's body. I mean, that's great. That's great fun. Or instead of rewatching The Social Network, which I'm not sure if anyone does that, but watch Sidney Lumet's Network from 1976 with William Holden, Faye Dunaway, and Peter Finch, who posthumously won his Oscar for that. You know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. That's really great about the newscasting industry, media in general. And William Holden is just like, he always blew me away. You know, Sunset Boulevard and just a cool character. Ended up dying in Santa Monica. He was actually a pretty hardcore alcoholic and he tripped, hit his head on, I think, the coffee table and just kind of bled out in his condo, which was just looking out over the ocean. So I hope it was a quick death for him. But anyway, I could be an idiot. I could be totally wrong. I could be thinking I'm winning when I'm just off base. But, you know, I like to have opinions. I like people to have opinions rather than being kind of lukewarm. And, you know, like Dirty Harry, Clint Eastwood says in 1998's Deadpool, opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one. And the Deadpool is actually pretty cool. Liam Neeson with a little ponytail plays a movie director. And Jim Carrey is an Axl Rose type rocker. And there's like, you know, there's like a basically a Deadpool that's going around town and all these people are getting killed and they got to figure out who's doing it. But anyway, it's the bottom of the 12th round here. And we got to wind this up and to circle back to where we kind of started with Mike Tyson. I found this pretty famous quote from his legendary trainer, Cus D'Amato. The hero and the coward both feel the same thing, but the hero uses his fear, projects it onto his opponent, while the coward runs. It's the same thing, fear, but it's what you do with it that matters. Or, if you prefer this often quoted Mike Tyson nugget, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.